Hello, everybody. I'm Radio Johnny, and you are listening to Recovery Radio on KRFP 90.3 FM in Moscow, Pullman. Recovery Radio is recorded live at the Latar Recovery Center, located at 531 South Main Street in Moscow. You can contact the LRC by phone at 208-883-1045 or by email at latarrecoverycenter@gmail.com. You can find them on the web at latarrecoverycenter.org and on Facebook. Recovery Radio's purpose is to share with our community how addiction and behavioral health disorders affect us all and how we deal with them. We also share the personal stories of people in and around recovery, highlighting their experience, insight, and hope for continuing recovery. And like I said before, I am Radio Johnny, and we're going to go over the April calendar. If I can get the page to turn, they seem to be glued together. All right, here we go. April at the Latar Recovery Center. Harm reduction, safe syringe exchange, and supplies is weekdays by appointment. Recovery coaching, peer support, that goes by weekdays and by appointment. Vandal recovery at the center, formerly the Campus Christian Center on the U of I campus, and that's Wednesdays and Thursdays from 1 to 4:30 and Fridays from 2 to 4:30. Alcoholics Anonymous meets every day at noon here at the Recovery Center. Narcotics Anonymous meets every day at 7 p.m. Sexaholics Anonymous is Monday, Tuesdays, and Thursdays at 8:30 p.m. and Saturday at 9 a.m. AA Monday Men's Meeting, of course, is Mondays at 5:30. The Reentry Support Group with Miranda is Mondays at 6:30. The AA Women's Meeting, that happens live at St. Mark's Episcopal Church across from the library here in Moscow, and is available on Zoom through our calendar, and that's Mondays at 7:30. Recovery Peer Volunteer Meeting is the last Monday of the month at 6 p.m. Yoga with Tuasi, I'm guessing. I probably butchered that. Tuasi, let me know. That's Tuesdays at 1:30. The Grief Group meets the first Tuesday of the month at 5. The Board of Directors meeting is the second Tuesday of the month at 3:45, and the public is welcome to attend. Vandal All Recovery meeting at the center is Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Our Events Committee meets Wednesdays at 2. New Volunteer Orientation, you could be a part of it. That happens Wednesdays at 3. Overeaters Anonymous is Wednesdays at 5:30. Oscar Mike Vets Coffee and Conversation is Wednesdays at 6:30. The North Idaho AIDS Coalition Free AIDS and Hep C Testing this month will be on Thursday, April 27th from 12 to 2. Recovery Radio on KRFP, you're listening to it this Thursday's about 1:15. Adult Children of Alcoholics, that's Thursdays from 2:30 to 4. Movie and Game Night, Thursdays from 5 to 8. Open Office Community Day is Friday from 10 to 8. Intern Meeting is Fridays at 2. All Recovery Meeting live and on Zoom is Fridays from 5 to 5:45. Overeaters Anonymous STEP meeting is Fridays from 5:45 to 6:45. And Al-Anon Live and on Zoom is Fridays at 8. And finally, Alcoholics Anonymous Sunday morning group meets at the Campus Christian Center, and that's Sundays at 9:30 a.m. You can also Zoom into that meeting by going to the AA District 22 website, which you can Google it, you'll find it. And if you're having trouble getting to Zoom, go to our calendar. There's links there. If you can't connect, give us a call, 208-883-1045, and one of our volunteers or staff will help you out with that. And today in the studio, before we get to our interview, I've got Daryl Kime, the executive director of the Latar Recovery Center here. And Daryl, I just kind of wanted to give you a chance to give the people that listen to us on the radio a little update on what's going on since we had the fire at the Oxford House. You want to just give us a little bit of update on what's going on?
I would love to do that, Johnny. I'm pleased to say that several of the folks who are living in the Oxford House have found places to live, but we still got a few that are staying in the hotel. They were planning to stay there. Well, I think they had enough money to make it through a month of staying in the hotel. La Quinta let them have quite a nice reduced rate as a way to help them out. And you guys can help them out, too. They've started an account at Banner Bank to help them buy all the necessities of life because these guys lost everything in the fire. This money might help them with housing. It might help them with clothes. You know, it's really money for everything. And you can give to that real easily. Just go to Banner Bank and write a check or give them cash and tell them it's for the Moscow Oxford House. None of that money will be seen by the Latah Recovery Center. It's not being received by us at all. It's folks, the Oxford House folks, their regional coordinator, put together this as an effort to help the local Oxford House representatives.
Cool. Excellent. And we're still waiting on insurance and this and that to find out what's going on with the house. And
yep. I can tell you that Moscow Fire, their local guy, did an investigation. I believe that some of the Moscow police are interviewing the guys that were living there. And I did ask if that was standard operating procedure or if that was a sign that they suspected anything. And they said due to the number of residents and due to the fact that police are more used to interviewing people than fire department guys are used to interviewing fires,
right,
that it was standard operating procedure. Sure. But they've interviewed several of the guys there, so that's mid-process. And insurance sent down an investigator, again, standard operating procedure in this type of fire. They sent somebody down from Spokane to see whatever they find out. And I have not heard the results yet.
Well, fantastic. I'm reasonably sure that we're going to find out it was a bad wire or maybe a who knows.
Yeah, who knows? I can't speculate.
Yeah.
And certainly there was wiring in that area.
Right.
You know, there's wiring throughout a house, and there was a plug-in in that area. I verified that. But that's not to say that was the cause. I have no idea.
That's right. Well, we'll just take a wait and see on that. But, thanks for stopping in, letting our listeners know about the
Anytime I get a chance to take that long trip down the hall, it's a good time.
All right, Daryl, thanks a lot, pal.
We'll
touch bases with you going forward if we get any more information.
Absolutely. Thanks for the time, Johnny.
You betcha. Okay, then, enough from Daryl, and get on to the show here. In the studio with me today is Angelica, and she's been a guest on the show before, and we wanted to get together again, just kind of talk about what's been going on with her a little bit. So welcome, Angelica. Glad to see you here again.
It's great to be back. Thanks for having me back on. I really enjoyed it last time.
Fantastic. Why don't we, or why don't you, because you know your story probably as well as anybody, kind of go over your history a little bit, how you wound up in the Palouse and a little bit of your recovery story, and then we can get into just what's going on the day-to-day for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I was, in active addiction probably since I was about 16 or 17. And then, I had a few really gnarly years with some harder substances in my 20s. And then now I'm going on about 2.5 years sober. So that's been really nice. I've got about 2.5 years sober now. And things for me have been decent, but people in my life, are still struggling with it pretty hard. Even my partner has had his fair share of struggles throughout the last few months, but he's back on track too, so that's always good to see. Every day counts. But it can definitely be a triggering environment when someone you're so close with starts to use again, and that's just something everybody can look out for. Is you can care for somebody as much as you want, but you have to look out for yourself first. And if putting yourself in a triggering environment is the wrong way to go, which for many of us it is, then just kind of have to cut those ties accordingly. But, you can still help people from a distance. Aside from that, things have been on the better track. Things at work have been going really well. We've had our best month in sales at my redacted job since I've taken over. It's the best month they've ever had in sales, the whole history of the store. So that was some really good news. And hopefully coming in soon to a meeting to pick up a 2.5-year chip. Radio Johnny has been telling me every day that I need to. And, you know, it's definitely, it can seem after a while like going to the meetings gets a little redundant, but it's always nice to like feel fresh in recovery again. And that's a nice way to do it. And yeah.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I've been going to meetings for a couple of decades now and some change. And you know, you never know what you're going to hear that's it's going to sound different today than it did when maybe you heard it from the same person who tells the same story all the time. Something will be going on in your life at that moment where it just hits you like a ton of bricks. I had an occasion like that the other day. Someone was talking about going into a bar that they used to frequent with some old friends to see a musician come out with some brand new music. And it was, the person was really nervous about it and like, can someone go with me and stuff? And it was going on through a group text. And I just texted back to the person. I said, do you trust your higher power?
Yeah.
And they texted back, well, yes, I do. And I said, well, then go and have a great time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it can be nervous, but, you know, in my program, AA, in the book, it says, you know, we don't shrink away from going somewhere if we have a good reason to go.
Right, right.
You know, I wouldn't recommend, like, some people I know have, they stopped drinking, but their social life is so wrapped up around a bar that they'll go into a bar and sit and drink Coke or sip coffee. And it's just, it's terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. It's when that's kind of how it is for my birth dad, my bio dad. The environments he really enjoys and the people he enjoys and the culture he enjoys really revolves around drugs or drinking or things like that. But that's, and he thinks that he can enjoy those cultures and that society without using, but just be a part of the group. And, you know, it never works out that way because it's just that kind of culture where it's the thing to do, you know. And I think the thing you said about a higher power too, or something just clicking different when you go to a meeting, is something I didn't really understand when I was first starting in recovery, was finding your higher power. And, you know, things for me that have been finding my higher power are just building up enough things in my life to where I'd have too much to lose. And so it can really be anything like that. And it's, you know, it's really eye-opening because, you know, you think right when you get sober, oh, okay, well, this is it, and I know how to do it now. I just don't get high. But it's not that simple. You know what I mean? You think it is, but then, you know, after a year or two or something, you know, and then 10 or 20, it's a whole different way of thinking about it. It's not just, well, I'm not going to drink or I'm not going to use. It's about, you know, it's almost like losing a best friend when you get sober. It's someone or something you've known forever and ever and ever, and then all of a sudden it's gone, and it's what you leaned on, it's what you relied on. So you have to find ways to fill that space without something that's going to tear everything down.
Right, exactly. Like what they call it, the big, you know, big hole in your gut.
Yeah.
You know, how do you fill that? And yeah, you're absolutely right. It's not a matter of just stopping.
Yeah.
I mean, stop. You know, smoking weed way back when, and that just, all that did was like leave a void that I needed to fill with something else. And of course, rather than doing the healthy thing and like start working out join a club something like that, my drinking increased.
Exactly.
I found a way to fill that void with another bad thing.
Right.
And I've seen that happen with people stop drinking or using, and they'll start gambling.
Right.
You know, something to fill that, to get that rush going.
Yeah.
That you think you need to feel good.
Yeah, exactly.
To feel whole.
Exactly. And for most of us who struggle with addiction, it's far from just substances. It's anything, like you said. It can be gambling. It could be video games. It could be TV. It could be food. It's just something about us that says, keep going and don't stop. And that's right. The hardest thing to do. And that's, you know, the classic one is too many and 1,000 is never enough. And it can apply with anything in your life.
Oh, yeah.
If you struggle with addiction. Yeah. That's honestly one of the ones for me is once I got sober, I had more money. And it's always, I just want to treat myself. Or I want to buy something for myself. Right. And, you know, it's that makes me feel a certain degree of success when I can walk in the store and buy something. And it's like, wow, I could never do this when I was using. But at the same time, there's that sense of responsibility that I can't just trade one frivolous habit for another. Now it's, you know, battening down the hatches, or so to speak, with the home life and like, you know, finally growing up. So that's a huge part of it, too. Because a lot of us don't grow up for a long time, you know, when we're using.
Yeah, that was for me, that's the way I felt about it. It was like I stopped maturing at like, you know, 16 years old. Well, you turn 40, you got a lot of life experiences. But if you're still behaving like a 16-year-old in sobriety, you know, that emotional part that you have not grown into.
Right.
You know, you need to refine all that stuff. And that's tough. It's tough to not only just recognize it, but then to change it.
Yeah.
It's like, how do you do that? And, you know, the whole program of Alcoholics Anonymous is a program. It's learning to live life on life's terms.
Right,
You know, because things are going to be crappy, you know.
Yeah.
Things are going to be good. When did I drink? When things were crappy and when things were good.
Right. The reason, there was always a reason. Yeah. And it's just one of the biggest mottos to adopt is, you know, it is what it is. And what are you going to do with what it is? You know, there's not much else to it, but you just have to take the punches that life throws, and things can get really, really crazy sometimes too. Like, you know, watching my partner go through his relapse and then seeing him and like recognizing that, oh, you know, I can tell you're using, and I know that it's in the house, or I know that it's around, and having that like power, or trying at least to have that power to not just cave and say, all right, well, where is it? Or, you know, go get me some, or I could do a little bit today. And it's been so long that, you know, it's, if I just did a little now, then, you know, I wouldn't do any more the next day. But, you know, history dictates that's just never how it is. And the thing we were talking about with maturing too is I'll be going on 28 this year, but I still mentally feel like I'm 20 or 21 years old, or even 19, because that's when things started to get, you know, really deep with my addiction.
Right.
And so I'm going to be 30 in a couple of years, but I'm still in that headset of being 21 or 22. And it's sometimes so wild to sit back and think like, oh, wow, my hairs are starting to go gray, you know, bills are coming due, you know, things are, I've graduated high school over 10 years ago now, so it's just, it catches up quick, and it's crazy to think of that time that flew by without even realizing it, especially it just becomes a blur. There's so many things I don't remember, or that I do, and I think, oh, that's so embarrassing, or things like that, but it's all part of getting through it is one of the first step. You have to accept all of it and that it happened and that, you know, you did it. But that doesn't mean that you can't move forward from it, because the more successful I get too in my personal life or my career, things like that, the more I can kind of feel this shame of having that history or the stigma that if someone knew that I was, you know, a recovering addict, that it would, they'd think, oh, well, are they a thief? Oh, well, are you know, are they going to be lazy? Or are they, you know, untrustworthy, or things like that? And so it's kind of, can be hard to battle knowing that you're a good person now and you can keep being a good person, but that doesn't mean that everybody's going to see it that way either. And that's just part of going with it too.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it took me a long time to let go of that baggage, but you know, through the amends process that we talk about in these programs, you know, we can't change what happened in the past, but we can make some things right.
Right, exactly.
You know, and we can learn to recognize our character flaws. so that we don't repeat them again.
Right.
And I have found that, you know, through my recovery journey, people that were close to me, that knew me well, noticed the change I was going through, the positive changes,
right,
actually way before I did.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just a matter of me or doing today what I did yesterday,
right,
and trying to carry that through to tomorrow, although I try to live here and now rather right. than...
But it's just about waking up every day and maybe trying to do one thing or be just a 1% better than you were the day before.
Right.
And even when you've got 10, 20, 30 years, every day still counts because it's always a coin flip, you know, every day, because you can't eliminate, you can eliminate triggers to some degree, but we still live in a big world and you can't right. eliminate everything or everything right. you're going to see. And so it's just about navigating through it too. And like I said before, what really, really helped me is building up so much to being afraid of how much I would have to lose if I mm-hmm. if I used again. And, you know, everybody has a different thing that works for them. And maybe that's useful to somebody. And maybe somebody mm-hmm. has a totally different way of going about it too.
Well, and it's, you know, that's a really easy thing to see and put, you know, and put in front of you. Hey, you know, things are getting better. I'm not, you know, spending a ton of money on, I had a cousin, a couple of cousins who quit smoking, and they were able to take the money they saved from smoking and upgrade their car leases. So they had really nice cars.
Yeah.
Because they had just that extra money from yeah. cigarettes and booze and dope. I mean, it's all expensive.
Oh, and yeah.
I'm not necessarily proud about how I got the money sometimes.
Oh, me neither. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
get what I needed to not go into withdrawals or whatever.
Right.
But to be able to look at your life now and where you are and see that you're accumulating things. My bills are all paid. Oh my gosh,
right.
I've got extra money at the end of the month.
Finally, a little bit comfortable.
Yeah, I can. I have a savings account.
Yeah.
That all kind of leads to the idea that what I'm doing is probably on the right track.
Right.
And
right.
there's always other things you can do too to build up your self-esteem.
Yeah.
I've heard it said that if you have low self-esteem, what you need to do is commit esteemable acts.
Yeah.
To build it up. It's
yeah.
not something that's just going to be given to you.
Right, right. And I mean, people like you and I and the things we've done to get money or get the substances that we need are, you know, sometimes for years we hold on to the shame or the guilt of having to do that. But, you know, most of the time the people that we've done those things to or that we've done, if we've done it to ourselves, the forgiveness is just in finally doing better. And mm-hmm. a lot of times that's all that the people or you need to see from yourself to be able to forgive yourself mm-hmm. is just to see that it's better. And it's just easier to know that you wouldn't do something like that again, because it takes months for you to finally be clear-headed again after you get sober.
Years.
Yeah.
Years.
You think like, oh, well, I haven't used for a week, so everything's back to normal. And it's not even close. I mean, it takes a long time. I am, you know, just now, even since high school, when I first, you know, picked up a joint or something, I'm just now starting to figure out who I am and what I like and what makes me happy. And, you know, I always felt like I was really behind the curb, but at the same time, you know, there's still a lot of time left. So it's, you know, it's easy to be glass half empty, but then you really, part of the self-esteem is just seeing the glass half full side of things too,
yeah.
because that'll really help the way you look at things in general. Perspective is wild.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and you got sober at 26. Oh my
yeah.
God.
Yeah.
What I would have given not to spend another 14 years
yeah.
to trying to slowly kill myself with alcohol. So, I mean, that's, you've got a step up that's really good. And I see a lot of people that are in your age group that are coming into recovery, especially from, you know, narcotics or
right.
meth.
Well, because the fentanyl and heroin right now is so devastating to every community. I mean, even as someone who used to use, thinking, oh, well, you know, these are urban legends that someone gets a hot bag or something like that. But after coming out of it, I look at it like a suburban housewife. Like, that is so terrifying. These drugs are scary nowadays. And the things that people, you know, it's horrifying. And, you know, there's people dying left and right. And it's sad to see friends that didn't make it out or know people that are still, you know, providing. And at first you think, well, you know, they're just helping out. And then you realize they're killing people. And right. And it's a lot bigger than you think. And it takes time to see the clarity and see it that way. And sometimes it almost helps, or not almost, I would say it definitely helps to kind of flip the perspective and see it as dangerously as it is, as opposed to kind of sugarcoating it when you're using, because you always think, well, it won't be me, and right. I won't be the one who gets a bad bag or something, but it, you know, just as easily could be.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, that's the world of denial.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh yeah.
You know, I know how to check. Oh, I can taste it.
Right.
It'll be, I can tell how, yeah.
Yeah. I'll only do a little.
Yeah. Right. Right. I'll do a little and see how it is.
Yeah.
And with this, fentanyl being cheaper and more available in particular than heroin, it's completely replaced.
It.
Yeah. It's really scary. The next thing I want to talk about will be after we listen to some music. So I'm going to spin a disc here, as they say in the disc jockey world, and we'll come back and talk a little bit more with Angelica, if I can spit it out properly.
It's never too late.
Hey, everybody, we are back. You're listening to Recovery Radio on KRFP 90.3 FM in Moscow Pullman, the coolest station in the nation. And I'm Radio Johnny, and I'm in here in the studio with Angelica. And we're talking recovery. We're talking a little bit about her recovery, my recovery, what recovery is, what it means to us, et cetera, et cetera, yada, yada, yada.
All the good
stuff. And I wanted to, we kind of touched on this concept of higher power, God, the scary G word that everyone throws up a little bit in the back of their throat when they see it on the wall in recovery places. But, just to start off, for me, the word God, it's a placeholder for, not for a person, but for a concept, for a way of listening to something outside of yourself to get, some of the AAs call it good orderly direction.
Right. G-O-D. No, it's a wonderful way to put it.
Yeah. And personally, I'm a dyslexic agnostic, so I'm not really sure if there is a dog or not.
I agree, agnostic joke, here as
waka,
well.
Waka. But for me, my concept of my higher power, which is I call it God, because that's a placeholder. It's not a name. It's not a thing. It's a placeholder for that concept. Is a God of my non-understanding.
Right.
And the more I don't try and understand it, the more that I just use this concept as a listening post. I listen to you, I listen to people in meetings. And it happens for me that I'm in a meeting and something's bothering me, or I'm trying to work through some sort of silly thing in my brain. And somebody will say something in a meeting is like, oh, that's it.
Right.
That's exactly the answer.
Right.
So, what does higher power look like to you?
Yeah, that was actually a pretty apt description of the way I feel. I was never particularly religious, and sometimes that seemed almost like I was a step behind everybody, because it felt like in a lot of the recovery-based organizations I'd been in the past, it was very, God is here for you, or God, and in the physical sense, the mm-hmm. white guy with the beard up in the clouds kind of God. And it was like, well, that's not exactly a higher power to me. If anything, I would say karma is one of the biggest things I believe in. And in general, just the more that I try to be a good person, the more it feels like good things come my way. And, that's the higher power to me is just every day being a little bit better, or trying to be a little bit better of a person, until one day I feel like I've hit a goal, and then I can reach a new checkpoint. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And 'cause you never really stop trying to be a better person. If we did, then you wouldn't have really been trying to be a better person at all. Right. If you stopped.
Exactly. But, I get that.
Yeah. Higher powers is definitely like, for my dad, when he's in recovery, his higher power is definitely the Christian or Catholic God. And that's wonderful. And I do find myself envious sometimes of people that can put that much faith in something that I don't believe in. And for me, I have a degree in anthropology, so I have held evolution in my hands. So it is very hard for me to subscribe to the religious ideas. And so finding some sort of stability or even person in my life who can almost feel like they have the wisdom or the omnipotence of a higher power is really nice. And I don't mean a boyfriend or something like that, but like, for instance, my mom has always been just an angel on earth to me. She would take a bullet for me. She would bend over backwards, do jumping jacks into hell for me. And so having, the guidance or being able to finally follow a path that she knows, or a path that I've set that she's happy with, has been an incredible way for me to feel like I'm satisfying some sort of higher power too. Because, not disappointing my parents has always been a huge thing in my life. And I would say 50 to 60% of the guilt that I maybe hold from the things I did in while I was using is because of ways I've hurt or betrayed them. And so having that approval, or them being genuinely proud of me, is a huge, huge thing for me, and I would consider part of a higher power, you know, force that drives me to do mm-hmm. things just as much as just day-to-day success, really, because I used to be so uncomfortable day-to-day, and every day was like going into battle. And so just having the comfort of being able to lay back on the couch or eat some snacks or something mm-hmm. like that tells me that I am in some way following my higher power, because things do seem to fall into place in a manner of speaking, you know, life always throws, you know, throws you for loops, but in general, things go pretty smoothly if you're adhering to the things you're supposed to. And so for me, that's been kind of my higher power.
Yeah. The idea of doing the next right thing, mm-hmm. you know,
right.
or when something comes up that is confusing or befuddling,
right.
you know, the four horsemen, bewilderment, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I can't remember them all.
I don't know.
when those things come up, the ability to, or for me, it's really a gift, because normally I just react to things.
Oh, yeah.
And usually badly.
Right.
But to that gift of, from my higher power, is the ability to pause.
Right.
And go, wait a minute. You know, what's going on here? I don't want to just be reactive.
Right.
I want to take the time to contemplate. You know, even if it's in a situation where, you know, you're out in the street and you bump into somebody and they want to rip your head off.
Yeah.
You know, that ability just to say, I'm not going to bark back at this person. I'm just going to say, I'm so sorry.
Right.
You know, I wasn't paying attention. I was looking at my phone, whatever.
Yeah.
Please forgive me and let's move on.
Yeah.
And when I do that, situations that might seem a little scary typically smooth out.
Right.
And, you know, and that's a gift, and that's how my higher power works in my life, by giving me those skills.
Right.
And even if it was a guy with a beard in the that lives in the sky and smotes you if you're bad, you know, if that's what suddenly plants the thought in my mind of, oop, time out. Think about this.
Yeah.
Okay. Now.
Yeah.
Now go on. Because, you know, when it comes to even the Christian God, like you were talking about, and Jesus, the big point in the Bible for me, the way I understood it anyway, is that you want to behave like he did, you know,
right.
Let him be the example. And I can get behind that.
Right.
You know, I can get behind that. You know, the things that I've read about what he did, how you treat people, the golden rule and stuff like that, that all makes sense.
Right.
You know, but I don't have to necessarily participate, like you said, you know, in the Christian or, you know, a Christian, Catholic, Lutheran, whatever.
Yeah.
Church,
et
to feel that I have that connection.
Right. Right.
And that's the important part, is, you know, having that connection, that feeling you get when your mom calls you up and says, oh, I heard this, you're doing so good.
Yeah.
And it gives you that nice, warm, fuzzy feel. Well, you know, that's your higher power giving you a little pat on the butt.
Yeah,
you know, saying,
exactly.
Hey, doing a good job. Keep doing this.
Yeah. Yeah, and it feels the same way with just succeeding in all the little things in life, like we were talking about responsibility or maturity or work in general. I mean, my job, it has been one of the most stressful things I've ever encountered in my whole life,
mm-hmm.
other than maybe the last couple semesters of college, and, you know, that was pretty much just because I was using. Otherwise, college was kind of a breeze because I was in liberal arts, and you know what they say about that.
Well, yeah.
But this job has been incredibly stressful, but every time I put in my full effort, it pays off, and I get pretty high praise, or, you know, for a while I was getting raises left and right, and, you know, I've kind of plateaued a little bit, but we're fine with where we're at. So that's, you know, beside the point. It's at the point now where just getting those praises or or feeling like I've been you know, working my butt off, and then hearing that I have and it's been paying off is huge, because that's something I would have never accomplished when I was using. It was the bare minimum for everything except when I was trying to score. You know, then it was maximum effort all the time.
Right.
And so, it was, using was a whole way of life for me, you know, and for all of us, it becomes the entire way you live. And so to flip that entirely and to feel like just, you know, one of the normies that you see walking by every day, and you think, man, it's crazy that they can take a pill at a party and never do that again. That seems wild, you know?
Yeah, like, yeah, those people that drink half a glass of wine and set it down, I look at those people like they're insane.
Yeah, yeah.
That's alcohol abuse.
Yeah, because, I've had plenty of friends who, you know, have fun here and there and dabble in things here and there, but they just don't have that addictive gene in them. And so it just does not, you know, they do something one time and they think, that was good. I'm satisfied. And to finally feel like I blend in with those kind of people, or to blend in with the normies, it feels really good. And that's a sense of satisfaction there too, to feel like I've accomplished something in that I'm part of the community, a regular old citizen, you know, instead of an outlier or somebody who's afraid of the police or one of those, you know, degenerates, as you feel when you're using. Mm-hmm. Not that we are, but that's definitely how we feel when we're using, you know. But
yeah, that remorse, and that living in that constant state of fear.
Yeah,
you know, from fear of missing out, different angles. Well, fear of missing out, or fear of overdosing.
Much more physical. You know,
like when I used to drink and drive, which was all the time.
Yeah.
It was like one eye on the road, one eye on the rearview mirror, you know, waiting for those blueberries and cherries to light up.
And a lot of us
ruined my day.
Done that more than we'd care to admit. And, you know, it's by the grace of God that we didn't kill somebody or ourselves, or... You know, it's one of those things where you look back and you think, well, there's a reason that I'm still here after doing all that, because I was meant to eventually get better.
Right, you know? Right. And where in my program, the big focus is on, you know, you get to the 12th step and it says, you know, we're going to carry this message. It's our obligation, basically, to carry the message of recovery to the still suffering addict or alcoholic. And that I'll never get past. I will need to always do that.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, I have found where, you know, when my life has gotten busy, just, you know, with work
or,
you know, something that's going on in your relationship or whatever, that, you know, you have to put a lot of focus on. When I get away from, you know, if I don't answer the phone when one of my fellows calls up, you know, just because I'm too busy.
Yeah.
I almost instantly feel like crap, and I'm like, damn it. Okay, I'm going to finish what I'm doing here. I'm going to call him right back and see what's going on. And, you know, maybe it's nothing, but, you know, the guy's sitting in his bathtub with a box of razor blades.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you never know when that call is going to come
in. If it's going to be good or bad or anything in between.
But when I do those things, when I answer those calls, when I help a man work through the steps, that's when I feel my best.
Yeah.
I feel tired. I rest well at night.
Right.
And I can be happy. I mean, really happy, not just high.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's, you know, once you've got a little bit of time under your belt too, and it feels like seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, you so badly want to be able to show other people that it's there, mm-hmm. and that it's so scary at first, and it'll be the scariest thing you will ever have to do, but the rewards you get if you can keep up with it, it's just so beyond words. I mean, because it's funny, because the reward is usually just a normal life, but that is something that we can't have when we're using. I mean, it's maybe one in a million are able to function while they use, but for the most part, it will always eventually go downhill. And so being able to share that there's a light at the end of the tunnel, or that there's still fun to be had after you stop getting high or stop drinking, because I still have tons of fun. I go to game nights. I do, you know, fun little things with my friends that I never thought I would enjoy because I was, you know, too busy holed up in a dark room with something in my hand. So, you know, it feels good to be able to share that and like at least try and help right. somebody through it. And a lot of people lose faith when someone relapses over and over, or they think, well, it's a lost cause. But any time someone gets sober, it could be the last time they have to get sober. And, yeah. you know, just trying to have it's easy to get fed up. And I've struggled with addiction myself, and I still find myself getting fed up with my bio dad sometimes because he's been struggling for so long. But then every time I hear he's doing good, I'm thrilled, you know. And it may be a roller coaster, but putting that faith in yourself or in somebody else, and always giving them that benefit of the doubt without enabling. You know, there's a fine line, because you can have faith in somebody and also not enable them. But right. that's a whole nother thing. But yeah. that can also really help someone or yourself just to get through is finding people that have faith in you, or finding mm-hmm. people that will support you no matter how many times you have to try, mm-hmm. you know, without bordering on enabling can be really, really helpful.
Right, mm-hmm. right. No, I absolutely agree. And you know what? We're about up against the clock here.
Wow.
Wow, I know time flies when you're having fun here.
Yeah.
So I want to thank you, Angelica, for coming in and talking a little bit with
yeah.
us today. And
you know,
we'll check
it.
Back in with you in a few months.
Yeah.
And when things go all to hell in a handbasket.
Yep. And when I've got the 3-year mark, we'll do another check-in.
Oh, that'll be fun.
Yeah, we got
that'll
about 6 months, so
give
super
us 6
excited.
Months. And maybe by then you'll have picked up your 2-year chip.
I know, yeah.
It will go from there. So I'm going to wrap it up here. And remember, you know, if you think you have a problem with dope or alcohol or, you know, behavioral health issues, you do.